and they made me a monster. And if you want, welcome back to 32 Fans in 32 Days. It's an Alex episode. Akiva has gone AWOL. He's exhausted from not commissioning our 32 Fans League. He has decided he did too many podcasts in August, and so he's just disappeared. So it's me solo today to talk to a guest to discuss probably the best, or at least possibly the best, non-Patriots team in the garbage AFC this year, and that is the Jacksonville Jaguars. And we've had, I think, three or four different Jaguars guests over the years, but we're going back to our roots. Our very first Jaguars guest from 2015, Albin Brook. So Albin, coming from his very own podcasting studio, he's the head of marketing for Buzzsprout, a podcasting company, so that makes sense. So Albin, welcome back to 32 Fans. It's been a while.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, Alex. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, you must be feeling a little better about your team than you did in 2015 or 2016 or 2017.
Yeah, I think I want to say it's 15 or 16. We were chatting and I was like, man, I think this team's got a bunch of talent. We're going to be good. And you and Akiva were like laughing at me. You're like, there's no way, man. You got to like accept Gus Bradley's not going to work out. But now, yeah, it feels good to be a little bit better this year.
All right, so let's jump right to the end of the last season. So you have that thrilling game against Pittsburgh where you put all the points up in the first half and you hold on, and then you take a lead, a 10-point lead into the second half against the legendary Patriots, and you thought a Super Bowl was coming. I also at that time thought a Super Bowl was coming for my Vikings because our game was later that evening. So talk me through sort of your emotional roller coaster in the second half of that Patriots game.
Sure. So beginning of the game, a bunch of us are like promising our wives. We're like, if we go to the Super Bowl, we're going. Like we're driving up there, we're going. And so there's a whole group of us that have like committed, you know, $6,000 each to go into this game if it happens. And we take this lead and we're like, holy crap. It starts getting real. I'm also a Georgia fan. So there's like two big collapses moments that are kind of similar for me this year. But so the Jags, it's like we're going, we're feeling great. We're up by 10. We're getting the ball. We're about to march down the field. And out of nowhere, we're kneeling the ball to close out. I mean, victory formation at the end of the second half, or excuse me, the first half. It was that was dreadful.
Yeah, that they went conservative, you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't been, at least the run game was doing really well. Blake looked great, and I expected Marone was like, I'm going to give it a couple shots. You know, well, Corey Grant had been running really well. Maybe we can pick up some yardage, maybe get another field goal, and we just went way conservative.
So let's actually jump right into the second half of that Jags-Patriots game and the conservative play calling you're talking about, because to me, that's endemic of sort of the biggest problem that this team has. And sort of what I think puts an artificial cap on the Jaguars, despite the talent, and that really is the play calling. And I don't know whether you blame offense coordinator Nathaniel Hackett or Marone or who you blame, but basically the Jaguars' problem is that they always throw in pass formations, and they rarely throw on early downs, and it makes them really predictable. It hurts Bortles, it hurts Fournette, and I have some stats to back this up. So first of all, and by the way, I would argue it actually got worse once Nathaniel Hackett took over midway through the season last year, because they led in the second half and lost weeks 11, 12, 13, 15, 17, almost blew the game against Pittsburgh, and then, of course, did blow the game against the Steelers. If the Jaguars had fewer than three wide receivers on the field last year, they ran the ball 100% of the time. So if you see two receivers on the field for the Jaguars 100% of the time last year, you knew it was a run. And, I mean, that's intolerable. Mm-hmm. And if we point to the Jaguars-Patriots game, they were leading by 10 in the second half. In the second half of that game, the Jaguars ran the ball. First of all, every single first down play in the second half was a shotgun, and every single one was a run, 100% of them. And would you like to guess the average yards per carry they gained on those runs?
It can't be much more than 2.5 yards if it's even there.
It is 0.75. Not yeah. Ideal.
I feel like I blacked out part of this game, but
and so the consequence of that is they had the second and long, and they threw the ball every single second down. Every single second down of the second half, they threw the ball. And by the way, they threw it downfield. They averaged the average air yards was 23 yards, so they're throwing it way downfield. They completed how many of those passes? Would you like to guess?
The answer is one.
They completed a single pass. Yeah. And then on third and long, every single play was a pass, obviously. And again, they completed one pass. So in the most important game of the year, their play calling was, even by their standards, like comically predictable. And especially when you were against a coach like Bill Belichick, he figured it out pretty quickly. And I guess my question is, like, what evidence do we have that the play calling is going to be improved? It's still Nathaniel Hackett, right? You got the same coaches involved.
Yeah, you gotta remember, though, where we're coming from as a fan base. We're coming from Gus Bradley, you know, calling everything on the field. So we are thrilled. I don't think you're going to get a negative word about Nathaniel Hackett or Marone out of me. But that may be due to, like, me having some sort of PTSD or something from our previous coaches. I mean, it is conservative, but I would say our experience has been sometimes a little bit eccentric in previous years for players that weren't that great. And so I do think we benefited throughout the year from it being simplified. The conservative offense has definitely got it. We got to improve there. But I'm hoping that as Blake is, you know, hopefully he'll be able to throw down the field a little bit more. They'll have a little more maybe confidence to, you know, let him try different things out and maybe not be so.
Well, but I mean, as I said, like 23 air yards is huge. I mean, I don't think any team ever averaged that over a season. So he's throwing the ball down the field. The problem is he's doing it when everybody expects it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think a lot of this, the way that it could be changed is we've got a lot of running backs that can catch out of the backfield. And we've seen in the preseason, we've done a lot of screens. So I think we're going to see more of that. And that will be, you know, we're still running the ball a ton, but I think we're going to see a little bit more of that. And then hopefully we'll see some stuff that's not, just the most conservative.
Yeah. Here's another, you know, I don't want to bring up a comparison to Trent Richardson because nobody likes that. But Trent Richardson put up a good fantasy season his rookie year, but his yards per carry was not great. And I'm not saying Leonard Fournette is Trent Richardson because I think he's much more talented. But if you look at his numbers last year, on 50% of his carries, he gained 2 yards or fewer, which was only three running backs in the league were worse. On only 26% of his runs did he gain 5 yards or more, which is second worst in the league. He averaged 3.88 yards per carry, a 43% success rate. But again, I'm not really blaming Fournette for this. I'm blaming the play calling because he had 50% of his runs with 8 in the box. So the problem is because everybody knows when they're running the ball. I mean, you know, again, defenses look, oh, there's only 2 receivers on the field. Well, this is an automatic run. So they stack the box, and they're hurting Fournette's numbers. They're also probably shortening his career. And, you know, I think I agree with you. I think they need to let Bortles throw more. I think they should be doing the no-huddle more because Bortles was pretty good in the no-huddle. And, again, I think they need to pass more in sort of typical run formations.
Yeah, I think that is spot on. And actually, near the end of Maurice Jones-Drew's career, we saw kind of the same thing. We didn't want to throw with Blaine Gabbert, and so we went more conservative, and we always had 8 in the box. And his numbers suffered until he had his ankle injury. And so I would be a little bit nervous about that with Leonard. If anyone's out there as a fantasy player, though, I don't think there's any chance that Leonard Fournette is a bust. And there's no chance that he's not going to put up good numbers in fantasy. So
yeah, well, the volume's going to be there for sure.
Yeah,
you know,
total belief. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the volume, but he also has just got incredible big playmaking ability. I mean, I think that's why you could see pretty not exciting numbers on a large percentage of carries. But then when he rips off a big run, he's fast and he can get around the seconds. Yeah, he can get around the defensive backs.
All right, so we jumped right into some advanced stats talking about the offense and you know, ragging on you for how they collapse against the Patriots. Let's take a step back and go through sort of our more typical segments on this podcast. So the first segment, or at least it was in the beginning when we started this a few weeks ago, but we sort of got away from this, is our coach confidence ranking. So notwithstanding everything we've just said, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your confidence in your head coach coming into the season?
Marone, I'll give him an 8. I feel like it's about the most confident I've been in a coach of ours in, I don't know, I'd say 15 years. So maybe it is kind of just I'm judging him against coaches we've had, but I feel pretty confident in Marone. It seems like the players like him.
Yeah, and yeah, it's also obviously hard when you've just had your best season in forever to not have a lot of confidence in him.
Right.
I'm looking at – When we made our coach rankings, we haven't done our coach rankings this year yet, but when we made our coach rankings last year at midseason, which is the last time we did it, I had Morona 25. So, and Akiva had him all the way up at 12. So Akiva was convinced from what he saw, you know, with the Jaguars starting 9-3 or whatever the record was when we did this. But, you know, I was not convinced yet. Although I'm looking at, you know, some of the guys that I had him behind John Fox, so that's probably incorrect.
And Vance Joseph. I think that, you know, good coaches or good players make good coaches a lot of the time. And so I do think we have a ton of talent on the field. And so there's got to be a little bit of it that you might be a little bit closer than Akiva and I, but I think it might just be because there's a lot of talent around him. And so there's a lot of players that are going to execute most of what he wants to do.
All right. And what about, what's your confidence in the front office, whether it's David Caldwell or Tom Coughlin or the whole group?
Oh, 10. I'm all in. I'm all in on Dave Caldwell since he's been here at the beginning. I know there were a couple years we had average drafts, but we've had so many late round picks. I love Dave. Tom Coughlin, obviously, he's coming back from the glory days, and it's kind of old man football style, and I love it. So I'm giving them full time.
So yeah, so let's talk about, you know, one of the interesting things with how this team is built. So this team spends more money on defense than any team in the league, and spends less money on offense than almost any team in the league. $123 million on the defense coming into the season. $60 million on the defensive line alone, which for comparison, $60 million on the defensive line, $80 million for the entire offense. So your money is heavily invested in, you know, in Saxonville, which obviously worked last year. They went from like minus one sack ratio in 2016 to like plus 30 something. I forget. I saw the number earlier. So there's a lot of money invested in that defense, and especially the defensive line. You know, does it give you pause about sort of the lack of investment on the offense, or you think this is sort of the strategy of how they've you know, found an inefficiency in the market and how they're building their team?
I just feel like it's what's been offered to us. So we've had a lot of opportunities to draft good defensive linemen at the top of the draft. So, I mean, I'm thinking of Taven Bryan. I'm thinking of Dante Fowler, Ngakoue, his third rounder. So we've put a bunch of money through the draft. And then big free agents that have shown up for us. So it's – and it's worked out. I mean, we actually don't rush, but, for, you know, we don't actually blitz a ton, but we get tons of sacks. And I think that is a product of we have a really strong defensive line. I do think that Taven Bryan pick last year, number 29, I think that that is – we know we can't spend this much on the defensive line long term. And so that money's going to have to go to other positions. But, you know, I think he's going to be there when maybe we have to let Darius or maybe Malik Jackson go.
All right. So the next question I have for you is your quarterback. So Bortles obviously dramatically improved from last season. What's your confidence in Blake Bortles? Where would you rank him if you were sort of ranking the quarterbacks 1 to 32 off the top of your head? More or less, where do you think he fits?
As far as, like, if you want to say quarterback, as far as his passing ability, and I know this is going to sound like a cop-out, I do think he is below average, okay? Everything else, he is well above average. So as far as a leader of the team, if you watch interviews with him, you watch him with younger guys on the team, he is, like, an unbelievable leader, and he's still pretty young. And he is a great runner. He takes, like, blame for all of his mistakes. So while I put him at probably a little below average, I'm going to go – I'll give him 12 out of 32. As far as who I would replace him with other people, it would be hard for me to pick 10 quarterbacks I'd want ahead of Blake. So I really like him.
So you have him in the top 10.
No. I think I'm putting him like right outside the top 10. Off the top of my head, I could easily come up with 5 or 6. Probably if I sat down and looked at it, you know, he's probably about 12 for me. But I think people are going to laugh at that and go, oh my gosh, have you seen some of these passes? For sure. Yeah, there's tons of boneheaded interceptions. But what this team's trying to do, run the ball a lot, QB runs, a little bit of some option, lots of quick little easy passes. We're building it around him, but now also he does fill that role very well.
Okay, so you're not going to love – I had him 24 when Akiva and I ranked our quarterbacks just a couple weeks ago. So let me throw some names at you, and you tell me whether you'd rather have Bortles or the guy I'm mentioning, because you have him, you know, ahead of a whole bunch of guys on my list. So, all right, Matthew absolutely. Stafford.
No.
No meaning. Sorry.
And that's as in I want Blake, okay. And I went to Georgia, okay. So I'm not like I should like. I love Stafford, but I really do think Blake fits what
okay,
I want.
Okay, Dak Prescott. Wow, no. Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers.
Kirk
for
Cousins.
Sure. No, and we definitely.
Wow. So I guess that's why the Jaguars re-signed Bortles instead of jumping after Cousins this offseason.
Yeah. Well, I was all about it. I was like, Kirk Cousins could be, you know, what we need. I would have been really excited if we had tried to sign him, but the amount of money that's gone to Kirk Cousins over Blake, it just does not seem like the value's there. I mean, I think he's making almost twice as much money.
So I don't even need to mention the rest of Cam Newton, Alex Smith, Sean Watson, Andrew Luck, Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, Jimmy Garoppolo, Case Keenum, Jared Goff, Sam Bradford. You want Bortles over all those guys?
I don't know. You might be able to convince me if I sat down and looked at him, but I will admit I am definitely a Blake homer.
All right.
I mean, this may be a little boring for people who don't love the Jags, but I'm too much of a – I'm definitely too much of a homer.
Well, look, I mean, I had him as slightly above average last season, which was a dramatic improvement over the previous 2 years, obviously. So, I don't have him knocking on the top 10 anytime soon. All right, so let's – all right, let me ask you, let's jump to the defense end. So as we said, they spent a huge amount of money on this defense. Actually, hold on. I have more questions about the offense. Well, I have a fantasy question. So we're in this 32, you know, we have 32 fans in our fantasy league this year, where we have a 32 fans, 32-person fantasy league. And four or maybe even five different Jaguars wide receivers have been drafted because, you know, this is a league where, I mean, to give you an idea of how deep this league is, the last few picks, I've never even heard of these guys, the last few picks in this draft have been Jeff Swaim, Detrez Newsome, Mike Gillisley, Equanimeous St. Brown, Jalen Samuels. So we're digging deep. But especially once Marquise Lee went out, people are desperate for a Jaguars receiver. So who do you think is going to be the beneficiary of Marquise Lee's absence?
Well, I think Keelan Cole is our best receiver even before Lee went out. So I love Lee. That's really going to hurt. I probably had him as number two. I think probably the person who's going to benefit the most is DJ Chark.
The rookie, the second rounder.
Got him out of LSU.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. So he seems like he's got a lot of speed. He probably has a bit. He'll run, you know, it'd be kind of the same type receiver as Lee. A lot of, you know, and try to stretch the field a little bit. So I think he's going to be the biggest beneficiary. You want me to rank how I'd have the Jags wide receivers? All right, so I'd probably go Cole, Moncrief, Dede Westbrook, and then Chark. And for your super deep league, I think Rashad Green is going to make the team, and we're probably gonna. He's probably the one who actually benefits the most because he will have a job at the end of, at the end of preseason.
Okay. So if you're taking the Jaguars' fifth receiver in fantasy, you might be in trouble. Look, this is a team, obviously they had a ton of injuries at receiver last year. Marquise Lee getting injured this year already sort of indicates the same thing is happening again. Dante Moncrief does not have a great history of staying healthy. They gave him, I think, $9 million to move over from Indianapolis. But overall, other than receiver, this was the sixth healthiest team in the league last year. And they had the healthiest defense. We'll get to that in a second. Let me ask you about the offensive line. So I pointed out how, you know, Leonard Fournette's numbers, not great. I blamed a lot of that on the play calling. Pro Football Focus has this as the 15th offensive line, so just about average. They have a great left guard and center in Norwell and Linder. They have an awful left tackle in Cam Robinson. What's your take on the offensive line?
Yeah, I think offensive line is going to be – I think that one's also knocking on the top 10. I think we are getting a little ahead of ourselves, and we think they're going to be much better than that. I'm really excited, though, about Norwell and Linder. So I'm feeling pretty good about the offensive line. We're spending a lot of money there as well.
Okay. And all right, so let's get to the defense now. So as I said, this was a defense that was extraordinarily healthy last year, and we saw the benefit. You know, they were one of the best defenses in the league. I guess the initial question is, you know, talk to me about the depth on this defense. Who steps up when guys get injured? Because, you know, realistically, and the Vikings, by the way, benefited, you know, as a Vikings fan, they benefited from this also. They were very healthy on defense last year, but you can't rely on that. So, you know, if the Jaguars start suffering some injuries on their defense, what happens to them this year?
I think this has got it. You know, I think we've got good depth, especially defensive line. We're rotating guys constantly, so I think there's really good depth there. There's okay depth in the defensive backs. Linebacker is where I think, you know, if we were to lose, I don't know, Smith, then, you know, I think if we ended up losing a couple of linebackers, maybe Telvin Smith and Miles Jack go down, then we're going to be hurting for sure. So linebackers is probably the weak point for us as far as depth.
Okay, and then what about in the secondary?
So we got this guy, Tyler Patman, this year. He's gotten a lot of playing time with Ramsey being out one game and then with Boye being out a game. And so we've seen a lot of him. He's a big hitter. I loved watching him. And he's kind of – he looks like he wants that nickel spot. So we got I think it's DJ Hayden. We signed him in the offseason. And I really feel like Patman, he might go and try to take that nickel job pretty quickly in the year.
All right, let me ask you a question. This is something we've been doing with some of the fans, and this is interesting for a team with a lot of sort of big names, especially on the defensive side. Who are the five best players on the Jaguars this year?
All right. Five. I'm going to go Ramsey has got to be number one. I think I've got to put Telvin Smith in there. I've got to go Boye as well. Ngakoue. And I guess I'll have to go Campbell. But then I feel pretty bad for leaving
Bortles.
Malik
top
Jackson
10 quarterback also.
Well, I actually didn't say he's top 10. I said
just
for
outside.
Me,
okay.
I think he's right yep. outside of there. But yeah, I think our top six players are all on the yep. defense. I think our seventh best is going to be Fournette, and he's going to be over there on the offensive side.
What was the reaction in Jacksonville to the Jalen Ramsey interview in GQ, where he trashed every quarterback by name?
I think that people love to hate.
Oh, no, I loved
I think
it.
It's a good
I thought it was
for
amazing.
The sport. Yeah, it's Jacksonville. We hate all of these quarterbacks. It's finally coming yeah. back. I mean, for years, we're just the joke. We're the joke where we have the Super Bowl. We're the joke when we have a good player. We're a joke when I was in law school and I had kids saying, I can't wait till you move to L.A. We're dumping the team and we're dumping everything there. You know what? It's finally come home to roost a little bit. Thank
yeah,
God.
Yeah, well
you know,
as that woman said, you guys
that
have
he
stolen
say
the
that
show.
I wouldn't.
So.
Yeah, a homeless woman in Jacksonville.
Yeah, has anyone caught up with her, by the way, after how last season went? Because she was right, finally.
I haven't seen anything since last season. There was like a follow-up interview where we did find out that she was yeah. homeless. So, you know, that's Jacksonville for you.
I haven't been to Jacksonville, so I'm not sure what you mean by that, but okay. What all right, let me go ahead.
I mean, I'm also a huge Jacksonville homer. I mean, this is my favorite place and I love being here, but you just got all types in Jacksonville. It's a huge city, so you know, you've just got really country parts and you've got the beaches, you got downtown, so everything's different and it's kind of a you know, you just got different people, so the chances that they interviewed a Jags fan and it turned out to be a woman, she's like, "Oh, I'm homeless," and you know, I'm saying all this hilarious stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's us.
Yeah. I tried desperately, by the way, to get her on this podcast 2 years ago, but this is before sort of the stories came about who she was. And I looked her up. I found her name. I couldn't find her phone number anywhere. So, all right, let me, who is the best? And you mentioned a couple of the rookies already. You know, you mentioned Chark, their second round pick, the receiver out of LSU. Who do you think is going to be the best non-first round pick rookie on the team this year?
All right, you want to.
Who's going to be their best rookie outside the first?
The answer, yeah, it's going to be DJ okay. Chark for sure. Round two. But the biggest, like the one that will surprise people, is going to be, I think, our seventh round pick, Leon Jacobs, linebacker from Wisconsin. He's going to start game one. So we are going to go into the season with a seventh round pick starting at as the Sam linebacker. And the dude, he is just this huge guy. And I just think that, you know, he only played, I think he only started 1 year at Wisconsin. And he just looks awesome in preseason. And he's going to be playing in a stacked defense. So I think he's going to really surprise a lot of people. He's going to get a lot of people be like, dang, where? How did this guy fall?
Yeah, this team has.
So yeah, that's my hot take.
This team has a lot of those, you know, like Bill Barnwell always likes to talk on ESPN, likes to talk about sort of stats that tend to revert to the mean and are sort of reasons why teams will be better or worse than the year before. And this team has a lot of those in both directions. Mm-hmm. Like, as I said, you know, their receivers were all injured, but on the other hand, they were healthy other than that. Their fumble recovery rate was 58% last year, which was seventh best in the league. And that's a number that, you know, basically teams have zero control over whether or not they recover a fumble. It tends to be 50% on average, which was a mass. I think the year before, they had a 19% improvement over the year before, which was the biggest in the league. So they had very bad luck in fumbles in 2016. They had really good luck last year. Another one, though, they had the easiest schedule in the league last year. But on the other hand, this year they have the fourth easiest schedule. So you haven't been punished too much from a schedule perspective just because of your good season. Fortunately, your division is still not that great. Although, you know, Houston will probably be better, and I guess Indy will be better if Andrew Luck is healthy. But you still have a relatively easy schedule. Let's take a look at that schedule and tell me what you think, all right? Okay,
yeah,
so week one, you go into New York to see Saquon Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr. and also Eli Manning.
Yeah, I mean, so the beginning of the year, I've got a bunch of close games. And I'll tell you, I think we're going to beat New York, but I think it's going to be closer than it should be. We had a lot of trouble last year with Tennessee because of their kind of power run game was our weakness on defense. And so if New York says, hey, we're not going to let Eli throw a lot, we're just going to let Barkley take it 30 touches a game, that'll be closer than it should be, but it's going to be a Jags win.
So one interesting thing about this team last year, you know, another huge difference between the previous season, between 2016 and 2017, was their turnover ratio went from minus 16 to plus 10. So starting a season against Eli is always a good way to boost your turnover margin, obviously, if Bortles can keep his own interceptions down. Oh, again, part of that had to do with the fumbles, which I said is a little bit of luck. But all right, so you start 1-0, a big win, and then you come home for your home opener. Revenge against the Patriots? What happens?
Man, I want it so bad. I think it's going to happen. We're going to beat New England, and it is going to be – I think we're going to have learned our lesson, though. If we do want to try to go conservative again, it's just going to be the same game. Bill Belichick does this to everybody. He did it to the Falcons. He did it to us. If you take a lead and you decide, oh, let's, you know, slow this game down, it's not going to work. But if we keep our, you know, foot on the gas, I do think we can beat New England, and I think we will. So that's another close game that I say I'm putting it in the win column.
Okay, so they beat the Giants. They come home, they beat the Patriots. You stay home to face the Titans. Traditionally a game that we see on Thursday night, although we will see them on Thursday night in December, Jacksonville and Tennessee. Even though it's two playoff teams this
year. So
two former playoff teams.
We're going to be like riding on cloud nine. We're going to be like, man, we just beat New York. We just went to New York and won. We just beat New England. And Tennessee's going to come here and beat us.
Okay.
So that's a third close game, and we're going to lose it. Almost every year we split with Tennessee, except last year and 1999, where we lost to them three times. And
went 14-0 against the rest of the NFL, as I recall.
Yeah, the only team in NFL history to have three losses and them all be by the same
14-0
team.
14-0 against the league and 0-3 against Tennessee. All right, okay, so you're 2-1. You're still at home. You face the Jets. Can you pull off the New York sweep in September?
Yeah, we're going to beat the Jets.
3-1. And now things get a little bit tougher in October than they were in September. You start at Kansas City.
Yeah, that's my first guaranteed loss. I mean, I put guarantee. I'm saying, like, I'd want at least 4-1 odds if I was betting on the Jags. I just don't see us going into Arrowhead and winning. So that's the first one I put in the loss column.
Okay, so 3-2, and then a late game at Dallas. So a lot of eyes around the country watching this team for the second time of the season.
Yeah, I just don't believe in Dallas's offense besides a good run game. So I say that Dallas isn't going to score more than 12 points, and Blake is going to be able to do enough to win. So we're going to beat Dallas.
So 4-2, you come home, a very tough homestand. You play the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson, hopefully healthy at this point.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I love Deshaun Watson, and I was, you know, open to the idea of us drafting him when he was, you know, last year. I think he's great. I still see us winning that game, especially since it's at home. So I put that down as a win for us. I think Houston is getting a little bit overhyped based on a small sample size of what Watson was able to do. You know, so I don't see us losing.
Okay, so 5-2, and then you have your annual home game in London. I said it was a homestand, although technically it's across the ocean, but it is a home game against the Eagles.
Yeah, I put that one down as our second for sure loss. I don't see us beating the Eagles. They look great, and if you've got a good run game, that's the way to beat the Jags. So I see the Eagles.
Okay, so 5-3 going into the bye, and that's pretty good because I'm looking at the second half of the schedule, and it's really easy. I mean, you face Pittsburgh on a Sunday night, and then you end the season at Houston. But other than that, not a lot of threats here. But you start after the bye, your first game against Andrew Luck if he's healthy in a couple of years.
Yeah, I have us beating Indy both times. I mean, I just don't see the being able to handle the Jags' defensive line. Their offensive line has not been good for quite a while. Andrew Luck is going to have to be careful if he doesn't want to get re-injured, especially with, I mean, he hasn't played. He's just been missed so much time over the last 2 years. So I have us just, you know, sacking Luck 5 times, and then he's just not going to he's not going to be able to throw it down.
Yeah, so Andrew Luck in his career, 6-2 against Jacksonville with 14 touchdowns and only 5 picks. But at the end of the season, you think it'll be 6-4. And in this instance, you guys improved to 6-3. Just getting confused here. All right, and then as I said, Sunday night at home against Pittsburgh, yet another revenge game, possibly this time for Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, we beat Pittsburgh twice
in Pittsburgh
at Heinz Field. So I'm still putting this as another one of the close games, but a close game that we're going to win. And so yeah, this is going to be another win. I think we've got a strong stretch here. Then we're going to Buffalo, and Buffalo, I think, is going to have one of the – I think they overplayed their hand last year, and I think they got worse in the offseason. So I think they're going to be pretty weak. So the prospect of having 4 games with Indy, Buffalo, Indy, and a Pittsburgh at home, I see that as being 3-1 at the worst. I really feel like we're going to win 3 of those games.
Well, but you've predicted 4 wins so far, right? You're sweeping Indy.
Yeah, I'm going 4. I'm going all right. 4.
So 9-3, but I'm just, then you go to Tennessee, who beat you at home earlier in the year. As I said, it's the annual Jacksonville-Tennessee game on a Thursday night.
Yeah, we're supposed to split. So this is, you know, we're going to have lost 3 or 4 against Tennessee in a row, and I'm going to say we're finally going to pull it out. We're going to
beat
them.
That's a 5-game winning streak. Another now, close 10-3. Game. You come home to face Washington.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep sounding like a homer, but we're going to beat Washington, then we're going to beat Miami down in South Florida.
Right. So I did say the second half was easier. I didn't know you were going to pull off a 7-game win streak. So you're 12-3, you go at Houston. I have to assume at this point you've clinched the division no matter how good Houston is or Tennessee or Indy. So 12-3, I don't even know if you have to rest guys or maybe you're fighting for a bye with New England or Pittsburgh or something. What happens in Week 17?
Well, we did this last year where we pretty much had it locked up, and then we – went and played these games that may not even have been, we didn't even need to win. We still played everybody, which is surprising. So we're going to play everyone no matter what, and we're going to lose to Houston.
Okay, so 12-4, though, for Jackson.
What my prediction.
So I'm in a wins pool where Jackson wasn't taken until 11th. So you think that was a big swing and a miss by the teams picking like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, right?
That's shocking to me. I am surprised the people are not as high on Jags as I am, though. Maybe that's a little bit of where I live. But yeah, at the low end, I've got us at 9 wins. I think that if we don't win 9 games, I'm going to be shocked. I'm going to be really shocked. So I'm putting 9 at the low end, and I'm putting 13 at the high. And what my guess is going to be 11.
Okay. So paint me a scenario, though, for a second, where they miss the playoffs. Tell me what has to happen for this team to go 8-8 or 7-9 or worse and not even make the playoffs.
Andrew Luck is back, and he looks really good, and we're all surprised. And so Indy's able to at least win one of those games. Tennessee beats us twice. Houston beats us at least once. Houston ends up turning out to be as good as everyone thinks. And you know, maybe Houston wins the division and Tennessee beat up on us enough that our in-division record couldn't get us there.
Yeah, it is an interesting division, and it's kind of like the AFC West, I think, in that there's none of the four teams are terrible. I mean, you could see a scenario where one of them is terrible, but you can also see a scenario where any team in the division, you know, finishes at 500 or better. So there's nobody to beat up on like a Buffalo or the Jets or somebody like that, like some of the other divisions, or the Browns or the Bengals, like in the AFC East and North. All right, so Albin, thanks so much for joining us. Everybody, go check out Buzzsprout, the podcasting company where Albin works. Good luck to your Jaguars this year. You know, I remember having conversations with people in January where I was talking about, you know, would I rather face the Jaguars in the Super Bowl or the Patriots? And obviously, that did not come to pass for me or for you. I don't know whether you were rooting for the Eagles or the Vikings. You know, although I guess by the time our game started, your game was over, so it didn't matter anymore. But good luck to the Jaguars this year, and if they continue to play as you expect them to, we might have you back in January to talk about the playoffs.
Yeah, thanks, Alex. I appreciate it, and love the podcast, and keep it up, and keep doing what you're doing.
All right, thanks very much. Bye-bye. Keep